Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Home Class Movie Chat. We are so excited for you to be here
Hey,
today.
hun,
Yes? What?
what about the intro music?
I forgot about that. Here comes the music.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Home Class Movie Chat. We are your hosts, married couple movie fanatics, Kat
And Paul.
And it is my pain, his pleasure this week to do.
I have been wanting to do this movie for ages, and I've got the movie, I've got the t-shirt, which I'm
and
not
you're
wearing.
Not wearing the t-shirt.
I know, I should be wearing it today.
I know, right?
But it's too cold to wear the t-shirt. So, but this week we are doing a movie that is considered one of the greatest movies in film history. I mean, this movie has been nominated for so many awards that I'm amazed that it didn't win the best picture.
And
of
Paul
this
is
year.
A legend in his own mind.
I certainly am. This movie, unfortunately, was a box office bomb. It also received 3 Golden Raspberry Awards, and including the worst picture. What movie are we doing?
Oh, please tell me what it got on Rotten Tomatoes first.
0. It got a score of 0 out of 41 percent of audiences surveyed. It is the movie that was released in 1982. It's an action film. It is directed by former stuntman Hal Needham. Which one am I talking about? I'm talking about Megaforce. The thumb kiss just comes right out and says it. This movie is one of those movies that
because I love Barry Bostwick.
This movie is the Nutcrushers of the world. The costume is very, very tight. This movie starts at 0, continues at 0, and ends at 0. And I'm sorry to say that because I absolutely love this movie. I mean, and the thing is, the only way that I ever saw this movie is that I was in a video store and I was going through the action section, and on the face of the video cover, there was just a motorcycle in sort of like a green sort of like silhouette, and it just said deeds, not words, Megaforce. And I'm like, oh, and I got my dad to get it, but it was rated G in Australia and New Zealand. So there was no chance that I wasn't going to be able to buy it or rent it because it was a G-rated movie. We got home and I sat there and I was absolutely enthralled. I mean, enthralled to the point where I have gone out and got the DVD and the t-shirt for this movie.
That just shows you how easily impressed you are.
I am so easily amused. I mean, really, you could even just cast shadow puppets on the wall and I will sit there for hours watching it if I can watch this movie.
Yeah, I slept through pretty much most of it. And the terrifying part is a sequel entitled Deeds Not Words was considered, but it was fortunately scrapped due to the poor performance of this one that we're going to talk about today.
I'm so upset about that one. But yeah, the film was poorly received by all the critics, unfortunately. It did bomb at the box office and was nominated, as I said, for 3 Golden Raspberry Awards, including Worst Picture.
Did it
now,
win any of them?
Sorry?
Did it win any of them?
No, I don't know whether it won them, but I know it just was nominated for that one. Now, it does star Barry Boswick, Michael Beck, Henry Silver. Now, I guess Henry Silver was just needed a paycheck, but I think that it's just it really shows you when you need a paycheck, you'll do anything, unfortunately. Now, this movie was released on June 25th, 1982. That means I was 10. I had just turned 10 when this came out, so I didn't see it when it came out into the cinema. I think I would have seen it maybe, I don't know how long it usually took to come out under VHS, probably 6 months before it came out to VHS.
Yeah, it can take like up to a year or whatever.
Yeah, so I could have seen it in sometime in 1983. It runs for 99 minutes. Now, the budget. The budget for this movie was $20 million.
For what?
Yeah. That's what a lot of people are saying. For what? The box office taking of this movie was $5.7 million. So it not only
I can't believe
bombed,
it made that much.
It spectacularly nosedived into the ground. But that being said, this is just 99 minutes full of just fun and I don't know. I mean, the dialogue is cheesy. The acting is cheesy.
Everything about this movie is cheesy.
No, the action is awesome. I love the action of this movie.
The action was boring.
I mean, there are some obvious sometimes green screens. There are some technical errors in this movie. But look, it's one of those movies that if you sit there and watch it, it takes you back to your childhood where you just really didn't ever care.
Your life
world
was simple back then.
It was. So when you see, you know, Ace Hunter, Deeds Not Words on the cover of the Megaforce poster, and it also says there has never been a superhero like Ace Hunter. He's not really a superhero. Yeah.
No, he's not. But can I throw out one of my favorite trivias about this movie?
Oh, hell yeah. Go for it.
This is something that just, I'm not sure there's any other movie that can make this claim to fame.
Okay.
It has this, Megaforce has no credited costume designer.
None at all.
At all.
Okay.
All, get this, all the clothes were designed by toy manufacturer Mattel.
Oh my, okay.
All the Megaforce soldiers except one wear a flag patch of their country on their left sleeve, and Dallas wears a Confederate flag.
Now, I will have a bit of a fact about that one. Now, I'm not going to say, I mean, I'll say it now before we dive into the trailer. But the funny thing about this movie is that it's shown, you know, when there's a dinner scene that they're sitting there talking about, you know, or sorry, not a dinner scene. They're talking, they're in the one of the hangars, and they're talking about the fact that anyone that joins Megaforce has to basically desert their country, that their military records have been wiped, and they're considered either a deserter or dead. So now my theory about this is, well, then why are you wearing a flag on your arm of your country? You've deserted your country. You've deserted your military that you're actually with. So, I mean, these guys are essentially, Megaforce are mercenaries. These are the guys where when freedom is threatened, other countries go to them and say, hi, we need you to come and help us. Because indirectly, in the event that, you know, a huge war starts, everyone can point their fingers at Megaforce and say, guess what? They're the ones that started it, because they are not affiliated with any country in the world. They're their own militia. So to sit there and say, okay, we are our own militia, you have to volunteer to get in, but you have to desert your country, your military records are wiped, and you either be confirmed deserted or dead, then you wear a flag, a patch flag on your arm of your country. That doesn't make any sense to me. But one thing about this movie that I find interesting is that this, because it was designed by Mattel, and a lot of the, you know, because I think, did they have a playset that was organized like with Hot Wheels or Mattel?
Yeah, Mattel produced a Vertibird and Hot Wheels playset based on the Megaforce theme.
Now, yeah. I've heard a lot of podcasts that have done, or podcasters that have done this Megaforce episode, and I do thoroughly agree with them. When you look at it, this is one giant toy commercial. It really is. You know, they've got it down to a science where all the action figures, the cars, the motorcycles, the planes, this is all an action figure set that you could actually buy. And you can still buy these sets. I don't know how much they go for. You do have to look for them on eBay, or you have to really search for them. But Mattel did release a line of toys that you can actually, you know, play as Megaforce. But, okay, you know.
So going back to the Razzie Awards for a second.
Yeah.
Okay, so we had Worst Picture, Worst Supporting Actor, and Worst Director. So the Worst Director was actually a tie for Ken Annakin and Terrence Young for the pirate movie. Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
Oh, that was terrible.
And Inchon.
Never seen it.
Hal Needham was up for Worst Director for Megaforce, and he actually lost to the pirate movie and Inchon.
Ooh, okay.
The
I'm glad you're looking up this. So this is interesting.
Yeah, it really is. So it was Worst Picture was Inchon that year, not Megaforce. Okay. Oddly enough, Annie was up for that one, and the pirate movie as well. The pirate movie was just so bad.
Annie was up for the
worst worst screenplay and worst picture.
Oh, come on.
Worst supporting actor, Michael Beck was nominated for, which I loved him in Xanadu.
And I loved him in The Warriors.
And oh my God. It's actually really impressive company that Michael Beck is in.
Okay.
The worst supporting actor. Ted Hamilton for the pirate movie.
Okay.
Ben Gazzara for Inchon.
Uh-huh.
Ed McMahon, who is best known as the guy who gives away the giant checks
yeah,
for the Publishers Clearinghouse.
Yeah.
was up for Butterfly, and Orson Welles was also up for Butterfly.
Not Orson Welles, are you kidding me?
And Michael Beck for Megaforce. Those are the nominees that in 1983 were supporting
How
actor.
How could you sit there and say Orson Welles was a bad actor? He's a legend.
Or Ben Gazzara.
Give me a break. Yeah. I think the Raspberries need their own award.
Who do you think won that year?
I'm thinking Ben Gazzara for Enchant.
Nope. What?
Don't tell me Orson Welles.
Nope. Ed McMahon for Butterfly.
Oh, no way. He would have been my last person I would have thought would have won.
Apparently, he should have brought the giant check.
Oh, my God.
From Publishers Clearing House.
Oh, that is not nice. That's terrible. I guess that was the only way that he was going to get around that one for not being nominated or winning.
Yep. But, yeah.
I always find it interesting with these Golden Raspberry Awards. I wonder if the actors actually get the award like mailed to them.
I don't know.
Or it's just maybe just a status.
Well, what would be interesting to know is if any of those movies' Rotten Tomato scores was higher than Megaforce's.
I don't know because
I've lost all faith in Rotten Tomatoes, where they actually rated Birdemic above Megaforce.
Well,
as a better movie than Megaforce. Okay. Megaforce is a better movie than
Birdemic.
Yeah. And they rated Birdemic higher than Megaforce. And so I've lost all respect for Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, because Megaforce is rated at zero. So
yeah, exactly.
Anything higher than zero, you probably get better than zero, unfortunately.
Okay.
But look, before we get started on this movie, we have to listen to the trailer. And this is a Don't Sneeze or You'll Miss It trailer. It is that quick. It's more visual than what it is talking. So sit back and relax, because here is the 1982 action film trailer to Megaforce.
From the director who brought you Smokey and the Bandit, Hooper, Cannonball Run, comes the ultimate spectacle. Megaforce, an elite compact fighting unit armed with the most sophisticated weapons ever seen on a movie screen. The mission, to preserve freedom and justice and battle the forces of evil.
The good guys always win, even in the 80s.
Megaforce.
See, I told you how quick it is. I mean, it is, goes from, this is the director of, and then it's just basically a lot of sound, a lot of explosions, small bit of talking, we're done.
Okay.
So now, it gives you nothing, absolutely nothing for the movie.
Well, we're almost kind of sort of talking about the producers and whatnot. Megaforce was part of a $50 million slate of films from Golden Harvest Studios when they were trying to break into the Western market. Other films that they have produced includes High Road to China, which I think had Tom Selleck in it, didn't it?
Tom Selleck and Bess Armstrong.
Yep. The Protector.
Okay.
And your personal favorite.
Which one?
Blade Runner.
Oh, Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Golden Harvest are predominantly Asian. They're in the Asian market. They were the ones that really went to Bruce Lee and said, hey, guess what? You want to be a movie star? We can make it happen. So they are predominantly Asian influence. So to try and break into the American market, onto the world market, you know, it's when you see the Golden Harvest logo, you immediately go, oh, martial arts for sure.
Yeah.
It's nothing that you'd expect for drama or act. I mean, you obviously action, martial arts, action sort of situation. But I always found it interesting that Hal Needham, you know, I mean, he was a stuntman that decided to get into directing. But he directed things like The Cannonball Run and Smokey and the Bandit. So
that's why it's amazing that this film is so bad, is there were talented people working on it.
He had some notable actors and he had some notable credit and he had some notable hits in Smokey and the Bandit and The Cannonball Run. So for him to go and do this one and it falls flat on its face, but the thing is that it doesn't give you a whole lot of ideas of what the hell's going on. Like we'll open the movie now, okay?
Well, so again, Hal Needham fell off a motorcycle during filming and broke several ribs. So
I don't know what he was doing on a motorcycle. I mean, he was obviously one of the extras that was uncredited, because he's actually in the RV that is monitoring what Megaforce is doing when he's attacking. We'll get to it anyway.
Yeah.
But look, the movie opens up where we get a scrolling title of what's going to happen and what Megaforce is all about.
Yep.
Despite official denials by leaders of the free world, sources now confirm the existence of Megaforce, a phantom army of super elite fighting men whose weapons are the most powerful science can devise. Their mission, to preserve freedom and justice, battling the forces of tyranny and evil in every corner of the globe.
So that gives you an idea of what Megaforce is all about, but it really doesn't, I mean, obviously it's not going to paint a picture. Now, the movie then opens up where we're introduced to, well, this is where we don't understand it to begin with, because you've got this guy standing in front of a tank and he's reading a script that he's reading out to these workers that are standing listening to him. Now, there is a guy that is sitting in the tank, and there's a whole lot of tanks we see, and eventually the guy just gets so bored with what this guy's talking about that he comes down and he drags him away and he basically says, fire. And then all of a sudden, the tanks are firing upon a power plant. We don't know why. We've got no idea why they're firing upon this power plant. There is a small amount of dialogue saying that we are trying to liberate you, but we don't know who they're liberating, what they're liberating, why they're liberating this thing. They're just blowing the shit out of this power plant. And then you see the tanks just start rolling away. So it's like, okay, awesome. Great start of the movie. We've got no basis of what's going on. We then see a aerial shot where we see two armored tank divisions basically converging into one area, but they're firing against each other. And we don't know, once again, we don't know who these people are. All we find out is that there is this force that are on the run, and you see that they're actually radioing to base saying these forces are on the run, we can intercept. And then suddenly you see this guy go, yep, permission granted. And then he looks up and he sees this woman shaking her head at him, and he goes, but this is the fourth time that Guerrera and his bandits have crossed the border this month. And you know, and he's like, the president himself wouldn't pass up this opportunity to get him. And this is where this woman looks at him and goes, no, you cannot cross the border. And so this is when he goes, oh, okay, sorry chaps, better luck next time, return to base. And that's it. So who are they fighting against? We don't know. I mean, it's so terrible that you start breaking this movie down, because I love this movie, but I'm tearing it apart.
Yeah, he loved it until he started tearing it apart. Now he realizes how stupid it is.
Now I just don't understand it. So then now we see that we're following a plane that's landing, and these two people, this woman and this man, get into a Mercedes limousine, and they drive and they drive and they drive and they drive. You just see the car driving all the way out into the desert.
It's kind of like the opening of Birdemic.
It really is. It just doesn't get anywhere. So when they arrive, they get taken out of the car. They get themselves out of the car. The driver starts taking the bags out. And the male, I'm guessing he's a commander or a colonel or whatever, he says, you know, is there no welcoming committee? No, nothing. No cool vodka and tonic? No, nothing. And he goes to the driver, where are we? And he goes, oh, where I was told to bring you. And he's like, oh, okay, fair enough. So we don't know what's going on there. So the car just drives away, and this is where the commander or the colonel and this woman is just sitting there, and they're just talking back and forwards about the fact that we've been driving out here. There's no welcoming committee, no vodka and tonic, no nothing. You know, what are we doing? And we're seeing a snake that's happening to come towards where they're sitting. And then all of a sudden we hear two gunshots and the snake dies. And then suddenly we see this guy strolling up towards them. And it's this guy holding a rifle, wearing a cowboy hat and a skull t-shirt on, as in SKO double. I think it's a tuna can of skull.
No, it's a chewing tobacco.
Is it a chewing tobacco? I thought it was
skull
like tuna.
Skull is chewing tobacco. I think it's SKOAL.
Right. That's the one. I always thought it was tuna.
No, it's cha.
Oh, okay. And so he basically introduces himself as part of Megaforce by the name of Dallas. And it's like, oh, okay. And of course, this guy is introduced. He introduces himself, and he is General Byrne Van White. And this is Major Zara. And they've come to basically talk to the leader of Megaforce as to, we need your help. And so this is when Major White says, listen, I'd like to be met with my own rank, please. I don't want to be having you as a grunt coming to talk to me. And he's like, well, we don't have any ranks in Megaforce, but the only rank we do have is the commander, but we call him Hunter. And it's like, oh, okay. So then he says, okay, well then could you just meet us? Like, couldn't you have found some better accommodation for us? And this is when Dallas goes, oh yeah, absolutely. And he says to the guy, because they go up to a four-wheel drive and there's an African-American guy sitting behind the wheel of the car. And he says to the guy, okay, can you give me a 4-7 in place of that rock? And then all of a sudden you see this giant hologram appear with a woman on the beach. Now, my only thing is, how many men have been having fun with that hologram? You can only think to yourself what they're doing with that hologram. And they are just like, okay, well, that's exciting. So they jump. So Zara and General Van White jump into the car and they're off. And we're just driving again. And we're talking backwards and forwards about where we're going. And there's a couple little things we do. But now we are actually pulling up to a rock quarry. And this is when General Burn White says to Dallas, listen, if there's something else you'd like me to see, it's okay. I really don't need to see it. Can we continue on? And he goes, oh, no, there, General, just listen. And you hear this roaring of motorcycle engines. And we see that we are going to be introduced to the commander, which is Commander Hunter.
Now, I'd like
But to before out... that, before that, we have to destroy a whole lot of innocent balloons.
Okay.
Because do you remember when they're coming down, they're doing a target run? Everybody has to do a target run at least once a month to keep their skills up, and you've got to shoot innocent balloons being thrown all over the place.
Yeah, while they're jumping the motorcycles, they have to shoot the balloons.
Yep.
It's like skeet shooting on motorcycles.
Yeah, and they've either got to do it with rockets or they've got to do it with machine guns. Some of them pop wheelies to be able to do it, but there's a whole lot of... I mean, they were saying that as far as the death count, there are so many innocent balloons that are killed in this scene. These poor balloons didn't do anything to anybody. And funny enough, I was watching this movie wondering if you could actually see people throwing balloons into frame when they were doing this, but I couldn't see them. Mm. So obviously there's nothing there.
Yeah. But I just wanted to tell you that the cars and motorcycles were designed by William Frederick, who worked on the movie Hooper in 1978. And he delivered them after 8 months. They cost $1 million and all worked.
And these are the cars and
motorcycles.
Okay, so out of 20, okay, let's break this down. Out of $20 million, we've spent $1 million on the cars and the motorcycles. Where the hell did the extra 19 go to? It couldn't have been for the actors.
Okay, that's so while cool. We're still here, This was actually filmed in Southern Nevada using M48A5 tanks. Of the 1-221 Armored Battalion of the Nevada National Guard. The missiles were actually model rockets manufactured by a company in Raytown, Missouri. The company was named Flight Systems Incorporated, or FSI. The filmmakers were so impressed with their accuracy over distance that they restaged some of the battle scenes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's also a little, well, actually, I'll get to a scene when we're coming towards the end because it's a little disconcerting. But I will come. There is a goof that I found, and I looked through the goofs and nobody picked it up. So I'm actually very happy that I actually saw this goof. So
what goof is that?
When we come to the very end of the battle scene, I'll tell you there's a rather interesting goof that is hard to miss, unfortunately.
Now, is this where has General Burn White already had his conversation with Guerrera at this point?
No, not yet. Okay. All right, now we're
when that's coming up because I have something to say about that.
Okay, so now we're seeing that once the motorcycle tricks have all happened and they're blowing up all these balloons and everything, they want to meet Commander Hunter. So this is where Commander Hunter comes through and stops his motorcycle and gets off and decides he wants to introduce himself to Major General Van White and Major Zara.
Commander Hunter, I presume. Call me Hunter.
I'm General Van White, Republic of Sardu.
It's a pleasure, sir. Target sighted and closing.
Major Van Buda, I presume.
Call me Zara, Commander. We have traveled halfway around the world to learn how our forces will interface with yours to help destroy Guerrera. I hope your plan reflects greater precision than we have seen so far.
Well, there are reasons for everything that we do, Major.
And do they include leaving your guests to bake in the middle of the desert, greeted by cowboy, and be attacked by wild creatures?
Well, if it's a comfortable tour you're looking for, I have connections at Disneyland.
Target destroyed.
My, my, my. You do have quite a way with words.
Is that the general consensus? Battles are won or lost on quick decisions, Major.
Now, I love the fact that they've got this little back and forth sort of thing, because, you know, like he's introduced to General Byrne White, and, you know, Zara basically wants to say, well, and you did hear it, you know, she's like, you know, we're being left in the desert, there's nobody that comes to greet us in rank or authority. And he, you know, Hunter really starts to get very, very aggressive towards what's going on with this whole thing. And we do see that when they go back to the military base, they're showing all the toys and stuff. I mean, I don't know where the hell this military base is, where you, I mean, Megaforce is one of those, as I said, it's a militia. It's a place where if you've got problems, you go to Megaforce, they're going to try and solve it. They're going to team up with you, but they've got no rank or authority. They wear their patches of their country on their arm, but they've got no allegiance to their country. They're considered deserters or dead, but yet they're going to go and help other countries. So it really comes down to, okay, so we need to take out this guy called Guerrera. Now, Guerrera, now, okay, this is a fictitious two countries, the peaceful Republic of Sardoon and their aggressive neighbor, Gambia. Now, Gambia are the ones that are being run by Guerrera, and they're the ones that keep going into Sardoon to basically overthrow them. They want to actually expand their territory. So this is where General Byrne White wants to try, with the help of Major Zara, to try and get Guerrera away from this area. So the only way they can do it is take Guerrera out. Now, when we now transition to seeing the whole, you know, run of things, I love how Dallas says, you know, with the fact that there was, every now and again, we just get a truck that's backed up in the back door and people just offload military equipment in all shapes and colors. Now, I don't know about you. I don't know how many countries just decide to give them their latest stealth weapons, right, or rockets or machine guns or stuff, and they just dump them on Megaforce's door and go, there you go, you can have that. I mean,
well, the irony of this is that the producers actually approached military officials for the cooperation in the design of the vehicles used in the battle scenes.
Yeah.
And they refused. But get this. This is what makes it interesting trivia. Okay. When the film was released, those same officials were so impressed with the vehicles, they asked for the plans, and the producers did cooperate.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yep.
I mean, the paint jobs on the Megaforce vehicles and the bikes are pretty impressive. I do like them. But once again, as I said, this entire movie is a movie for Mattel. It's a way to sell kids' toys. It really is. And it's really interesting because we do see on the next scene that we're all going to go to dinner, that after we've been shown all the toys and the latest, you know, weapons and stuff like that, we're now going to be going out to dinner. And I don't know about, I mean, I've never been in the military, but I don't think that a mess tent should be like a 5-star restaurant with white tablecloths. And
it's more like what it looks like in MASH.
Yeah. But this is all white tablecloths. There is waiters going around the place. Everyone is dressed up to the nines. I mean, even where Zara is sleeping, her quarters are extremely beautiful, although it is so overpowering with the neon pink and purple lights around the room. It's just, yeah, I mean, they're trying to make it futuristic. They have fallen so far short of futuristic. But it's really interesting how when Hunter comes to the door, he's like leaning very, very casually against the door. And, you know, Zara, you know, opens the door and he goes, oh, is the accommodations to your liking? And she goes, yes, they're quite beautiful, considering the fact that when I'm in the battle, I usually sleep next to my men. And so he does happen to look at her chest as far as what medals that she's got on, and decides to give him a bit of a feel. So it's almost like I'm getting a bit of a feel of the...
It's an excuse to feel her up.
Basically. And he goes, oh, there's one missing. And she goes, really? Which one? He goes, the Good Conduct Medal. And it's like, okay. So now we go into the restaurant.
Saying she's a naughty girl.
Oh, yeah, baby. There are many of us sitting there going, oh, my God, you guys actually watch Megaforce? I love Megaforce. I'm sorry.
No, I slept through it, thank you.
She slept through it. I watched it. That's okay. So if anyone's sitting there going, why isn't Kat talking very much? She slept through most of this movie, so I'm the
and
one.
Honestly, I'm finding this podcast as boring as the movie was.
I'm sorry to say. I'm trying to make it exciting.
No, I'm loving listening to you, but it's just like I've got about 8 pieces of trivia, and then I'm out of here.
I mean, if you want this to go into excitement, I could just do it in my birthday suit. So right, now we're in
I'm
the
restaurant. I'm not going there.
It's not
going
to go there. So now we're in the restaurant, and we're having a bit of a conversation about Guerrera and, you know, what's going on with him. And we find out that at one stage that Hunter actually was in service with Guerrera for about 8 months. And he was also saying that when Guerrera decided to break away from his own country, because the country that he was serving, he actually had to lay down his arms and watch his country die. So he then decided to become a militia, and he went and started to buy stuff in the black market to fund his own militia to go out and avenge all the other countries. And we found out that at one stage, Hunter got very, very close to bringing him back onto their side as a good guy. And this is when Burn White says to Hunter, well, what happened? And he goes, he stole my lighter. And it's like, and he goes, and that's the way it is. And it's like, that makes no sense of what we're ever talking about.
But it pretty much sums up this movie.
Yeah. So now we decide that we are going to have a bit of a battle plan. Now we're going into a war room right now. Now we've got Burn White, we've got Zara, we've got Hunter, and we've got Dallas. And we're all sitting there watching this hologram. And the battle plan is hook, line, and sinker. And it's basically to go in to be the megaforce are going to be dropped from aircrafts into Guerrera's airspace, drop down, go in, surgically attack his base, flee before he knows what's going on. At that stage, the Guerrera will certainly be on the move, start to try and track where Megaforce is going. They'll rendezvous in a certain at a certain point where Guerrera will basically find them. Megaforce will then continue on, cross the border, where Burn White will be sitting there with his armored division. And once they cross the border, it's now it's a free-for-all. You can take Guerrera out. And he's like, oh, that's awesome. This is exactly what we need to do. Of course, it's at this stage that Zara decides that, well, I love one of the scenes that we're in one of the things. He goes, yes, well, make sure that when we are successful, we need bottles of Dom Perignon for 60. And it's like, okay. And this is when Zara gets up and goes, oh, the Dom Perignon, make it for 61. I'm going with them on this mission. And this is when Hunter goes, excuse me? And she goes, I'm a soldier, not a politician, you know. And she said, so I'm going to come on this mission. And he, and of course, Hunter is like, well, I don't believe you've got the necessary skills in which to join Megaforce. And she's like, well, try me. Now, what I find really interesting about this is that she goes through jumping out of a plane. Now, she's a soldier, so she knows how to jump out of a plane. But we are seeing the next scene. We've got Hunter and we've got Dallas and we've got Zara in a plane. And Hunter is talking to her like she's never skydived ever in her life. He's like,
that's called mansplaining, honey.
Yeah. He's like, oh, if you want to go to a dive, you tuck your arms in like this. And if you want to slow down, you open your arms out. And he goes, now there's nothing to be afraid of. If you want, I can take you out by the hand. And if you freeze up, I can pull your ripcord for you. And she's like, is that all? And he goes, yes. And she just dives out of the plane. Unfortunately,
he's lucky she didn't kick him in the balls.
Yeah. But unfortunately, at this point, this is one of the worst green screens I've ever seen in my life, because you see the two skydivers. Obviously, it's not the actors. They're skydiving out there. Then when you want to get a close up of, say, Barry Boswick being Hunter doing skydiving, you see that there is a video screen at the back of him. So he's obviously on some sort of trapeze or some sort of wiring where he's doing it. So you can actually see her in the background on a video screen. When you get to see her close up, you see him as a video screen. So the continuity of video screens to actual live action is all over the place. It really is.
This film did actually pioneer the use of what's called introvision.
Yeah.
A system that allows actors to walk in and out of photographs instead of sets.
Okay.
It was used in the movie to actually create the headquarters for the private army. And apparently the film's producer, Albert Ruddy, said it's an absolutely phenomenal system. There's no way you can get the quality and speed of delivery at this cost.
Okay. But it's still, the green screening and the video, the way that you got the video screens, it looks really off. So you do see that they do land after skydiving and we're being picked up by a helicopter, which I find interesting that you've jumped out of a plane to land on the ground to get into a helicopter to fly away. It's like, That makes a lot of sense. But we see that Zara says, you know, do you mind if I take the controls of the helicopter? So we see that she's able to fly a helicopter. And then the next scene we see is that she is in a, I guess, a simulator where she's sitting in a vehicle and it's a simulation, it's a battle simulation of what she would be experiencing on the battlefield if she was in Megaforce, mm-hmm. where she is, it's almost like a giant video computer game. It really is. She's sitting in a cockpit, but everything is that you're seeing, like she's shooting at tanks, whatever, you hear a sound as if she got a hit. You'll see her drive around the corner. You'll see her shoot again. You'll see another hit. And so it's a giant video game. And so at the end of this, we see that the screen goes to black and she looks at Hunter and she says, there you go, a perfect score. What else would you like me to prove that you want me to do to prove that I can be in Megaforce? And he's like, nothing. He said, I've got an apology to make. He said, I shouldn't have let this go on for as long as it did. He said, I can't let you come with us because those 60 guys, they think as one person, if one guy makes a decision, the other guy backs him up. So to introduce somebody that could potentially limit their capabilities or put their life in danger, he said, I can't let that happen.
Well, it's that old argument that women don't belong in battle because they don't have a penis.
Well, yeah, yes, okay, yes and no. In this way, in this era, yes, definitely, I agree. Back then, in the 80s, no, women were not supposed to be frontline soldiers. But I find it interesting that Zara says, well, I sleep next to my men when I'm in the field of battle. So maybe she is those commanders that she'll stay behind the base, but she still is like trying to be, I'm one of you guys, even though I'm not going to go in to be in the thick of battle, I am still part of the group. You know, I'm trying to show you that I'm part of our team sort of situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's Hunter saying, you know, I will not allow my soldiers to be influenced by you. Unfortunately, I can't let you go.
Well, they used to think that having a woman in combat would distract the soldiers from their job because they'd be spending all their time trying to protect the woman.
Yeah, well,
can't take care of themselves in battle.
I do understand that, but it really does.
That is said sarcastically. In case anybody's saying, about what I just said, is like, no, that's crap.
But, you know, I mean, and Hunter is right because he's saying that her presence as an outsider would disrupt the trust and familiarity of his forces, and he just won't let that happen. So my only question to you is, okay, if she was never going to go on that mission, why did he allow her to think she was going to go on the mission if she had to jump through all these hoops? Because that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's getting her to jump all through all these hoops.
Trying to get her to admit that she can't do it, and so she'd just leave of her own accord.
But I like how the fact that she gets a perfect score on everything and says, right, there you go, I can join you on this mission. What do you want me to do? And he's like, well, nothing, you weren't going anyway. So it really is, I'm going to kick you in the ass while you're down. You're not going, so don't even think about it. But it's insulting to her because she's a military official. She's a soldier, so I can do everything that you can. Okay, mm-hmm. Prove it. Okay, I prove it all. So am I going to go? No. Never going to let you. No, I was never going to let you go. So why would? So you've wasted my time to go through all
because
these
a lot groups. Of guys are jerks, honey.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Hunter is he is becoming a jerk.
He's an egomaniacal ass.
Yeah, unfortunately. So now we do see that
with
now.
With the stupid thumb kiss.
We are getting to the thumb kiss. The thumb kiss is coming. If anyone wants to know what the thumb kiss is, go on to YouTube, go on to the closing scene of Megaforce, and you'll see the thumb kiss. It is really awesome. And I'm sorry that we don't have very many sound grabs to this movie because we really don't have anything. There's really nothing. If you want to see Megaforce, there's all about Power Rangers, unfortunately. So
actually, there's a YouTube video where Barry Bostwick discusses the origin of the Megaforce thumb kiss. It's 58 seconds.
No, really? Don't know. I might put that on the very end of the podcast as the
or
sound
at least
grab.
A link to it.
I'll give you that. I'll play it that way. Our listeners.
That's 58 seconds. That's too long.
That's fine. They can listen to it. So eventually, Megaforce decides that they're going to go into Gambia and they're going to mount a sneak attack against Guerrera's forces. Now, it's so unfortunate that as I'm getting older, I'm actually noticing. I think it's more because I do podcasts and I'm actually having to really pay attention to movies because. You see the planes. Before they go under the planes, Hunter decides that he's going to. Obviously, Zara is not going with them, but he and Zara make a date, and they're going to go to the Lion's Head, which is a pub in London, and they're going to go tomorrow for a date. And this is where the origins of the thumb kiss starts, which is awesome. And we see that Megaforce is going to go into Gambia and mount a sneak attack on Guerrera. So, you know, she's like, well, I know I'm not going, but I'm so glad I came this far. And he goes, look, tomorrow, why don't we have our celebration drink at the Lion's Head in London? And she goes, you know, yes, okay, I'll do that. And this is where they do the thumb kiss before they leave. And we see that the transport planes are now taking off from the desert into Namibian airspace. And Hunter is literally just off with the Pixies. And Dallas is trying to talk to him about the mission. What are we going to do? Where are we going to go? Who's going to, when we get on the ground, who's going to divide up? Who's going to go this? And Hunter is just off with the Pixies. And of course, Dallas says to him, well, you should have brought her along. You know, at least we would have got some work done. And he goes, oh, well, I couldn't have done that. And of course, Dallas goes, couldn't or wouldn't? And he goes, didn't. And he goes, okay. He said, I understand that. He said, I was in love once. And he said, I got some really great advice from a friend of mine. And Hunter's like, okay, well, what was the advice? And he goes, oh, he said, well, when I was going to drop into where I was going to drop to, he says, you love him in blue and you love him in red, but most of all, you love him in blue. And he goes, And you see Hunter go, love him blue, love him red. He goes, that is totally inapplicable to anything that's going on here. And it's dumb. Who gave you that advice? And he goes, you did.
You did.
And he goes, oh, but it was wise. Very wise. And he goes, yeah, I thought you'd say something like that. So now we see.
Yeah, honestly expected it to go, you love him in blue, you love him in red, but most of all, you love him in bed.
I think because this was a G-rated movie, they couldn't put that one in there. I'm sure at some stage someone went, love him in bed. There's an idea, but you can't do that in a G-rated movie. It's all going to be bubblegum and unicorns.
No, you can say that because you're not showing anything like it.
No, yeah, but there are kids would sit there and say to mum and dad, what does that mean in the bed? Be like, don't worry about that, son. Just sit there and watch.
They just cuddle in bed.
They go there and have a sleep. So now we see that they are going to be being released out of the aircraft because they're not going to land. They're going to actually have to drop. So all the motorcycles and cars are going to drop from the aircraft into Namibian airspace. Now, there is a lot of parts of this movie that I sit there and go, I saw something I didn't want to see. And this is unfortunately one of the parts, because as the bikes and cars are dropping out of the aircraft, you see that there is all the cars and the motorcycles on strings that are hanging from the top of a girder.
Mm-hmm.
You see the plane. Okay, so you see like a static shot of the sky. You see the plane on a string being carried out to the right-hand side of screen, and all the cars and the bikes are all hanging from strings as they're being lowered down to the ground, which is unfortunate because it was a great shot. But the only thing that I also find interesting is when the bikes and the cars land onto the ground, they have to cut their ripcords. Now, the ripcords would be enormous to slow down the cars and the bikes. When the bikes and the cars land and they cut their cords and they ride away, not one parachute hits the ground. Shouldn't the parachute then, well, shouldn't when they hit the ground and they cut the cord, shouldn't the parachutes then deflate and fall onto the ground?
Yeah,
they don't, unfortunately. So this is the action scene where we see that they are going into Guerrera's area where Guerrera is stationed, and they blow the shit out of the area, and then they basically cut out and run. So this part of the movie is just a lot of shooting and rockets and explosions, and they're now making themselves
so in other
known.
Words, the sound grab is pointless.
It's pointless. It's a lot of explosions, machine gun fires, and it's all over the place. So although they've managed to destroy Guerrera's base, they are told by Van White that Sardoon has decided that they will not allow access across the border for Megaforce because they considered Megaforce to be too dangerous as a global organization. So now, you know, when they got out of there, because that was the whole thing, blow up a lot of Guerrera's forces, get out of there. Guerrera goes on the move, follows Megaforce, keeps watching them as they go through. They do their refuel in the center of the desert, then they take off going towards Sardoon, cross the border. General Byrne is going to be waiting there as Guerrera is coming towards them. They'll cross the border as well. They'll be in their territory, and then they'll either kill them or arrest them. But
now, it's interesting that despite all of these battle scenes, not one person is seen dying on film. Only three men, a bazooka squad, are suggested to have been vaporized by the Megaforce control van.
Yeah, I did see that part, but the way they do it is the sound that they actually do is very interesting, because this is when you first see Hal Needham, and he's in the tank, and you see the guys coming with the bazooka, and you can see that there's like an eye that actually follows, tracks them where they're going. And when you see them and he presses the button to basically vaporize them, you almost hear like someone's high sped up like a tape. It sort of goes, and it goes really, really quick. So it's comical rather than, you know, you don't see the explosion. You just see some smoke, but then all you hear is like, and it's done. And it's like, oh, okay, that's cool. Yeah. So when we do see that Megaforce is refueling in their desert refueling station, they get a call to say, listen, there's a red and white helicopter, which is Burns, General Burns helicopter, that comes in and basically says to him, you've done a too good a job. He said, if I let you cross the border into Sardoon, it is going to be considered a blatant act of war. And that means we will be in a huge battle and a huge war within 48 hours. And this is when Megaforce and Hunter basically says, so if we cross the border, you're going to be at a war. And so what's going to happen? And he's like, we can't allow you to cross the border. So unfortunately, then we see that Guerrera is flying in, because this is when Burn White decides that he's going to be just going to speak to some of the Megaforce personnel. And we see that Guerrera comes through and says to Hunter, or speaks to Hunter and says, listen, you know, there's a way that we can get you out of this situation. The modern Major General is not allowing you to cross the border. You cannot go back the way you came. The only place that you are going to be able to be picked up with your planes is the dry lake bed. And my forces are sitting there right now. So I'll give you an option. You lay down your arms and I will guarantee you safe passage. And he opens the door to his helicopter. And this is where Hunter looks in and goes, yeah, there's not enough seats. And he goes, listen, he says, you are a great, great leader, maybe the greatest leader in the history of the world. But you've got a one small flaw. He says, the people that you're actually commanding are just numbers. He said, you have to think for yourself and think of yourself. So I will guarantee you safe passage out of here. Come with me now. Don't worry about your soldiers. Leave them to my forces, or to basically wander the desert, because they're not going to be able to go anywhere. Or if they go into the dry lake bed, they're going to get killed and slaughtered as they come through. What are you going to do? And this is where Hunter basically says, look, no, I'm not going to go along with that. And Byrne comes back and says, sees Guerrera and he says, oh, so you did capture him after all. Good show. We don't have to do anything. And this is where Guerrera says, you know, you obviously came here for the same reason that I did, to give him some terrific bad news. And this is when he does say that there is no way in hell that you're going to get to the dry lake bed at any time soon, because my forces are there right now and you're going to get basically taken out. So it's like, okay. So now Hunter's on a decision level. What am I going to do? But we've had a topographical map of the lake bed showing that there is a small trail in between Guerrera's forces to go in the center of the lake bed to be picked up by the planes. However, there's one small problem. When the planes are going to be landing, Guerrera is going to basically open fire on the planes, possibly destroy them, and there's no way in hell that we're going to be able to get through. So it's like, okay. All right, so what are we going to do? So this is where Dallas says, well, I'm going to follow you to the ends of the earth, so I'm in. And all of his forces decide, well, they're in. So we do see that Megaforce happens to go up to the back part of where Guerrera's forces are. And now, for some reason, they decide that they're going to run on stealth. Stealth? I don't think the technology for stealth is going to limit the noise of motorcycles and cars. But another problem with the stealth technology is if there is stealth, then they are kicking up so much dust behind Guerrera, they could see them coming a mile off.
At least
a mile off. It's really not going to be one of those things that they're going to sit there and go, okay, so we can creep up on them and these idiots are not going to see us and we're going to punch a hole straight through their armor and meet the planes in the center without them seeing it. So it's like, yeah, okay. So you see Megaforce are coming up to the back of Guerrera's tanks, and they decide that, okay, they're going to run on stealth to go through the center. And as they're about to proceed, we see that the planes are starting to come in to land to pick up Megaforce. And one of the planes is destroyed. So unfortunately, or not destroyed, they've actually damaged. So that plane is inoperable. They have to return to base. So what they have to do is all the Megaforce personnel have to literally put their vehicles on self-destruct, because there's no way in hell that Guerrera are going to get their hands on their technology. So as we see that Megaforce are coming up towards Guerrera, they unload with a barrage of rockets and machine gun fire against tanks. That's questionable at best. But of course, when they do punch a hole straight through Guerrera's forces, now Guerrera are trying to swing around towards the back of them to fire against Megaforce, but they're too quick. So as they go through the center, Guerrera's forces are still turning around to fire at the back of them, so they now have to do a full 360 to start firing at the front of them. And of course, they are now unloading on Megaforce, which decides that, well, we need some cover to make sure we're not going to get killed. So they turn on this colored smoke, and it is the colors of the rainbow, every color of the rainbow, to basically limit the visual ideas of where Guerrera is to where Megaforce is. So basically it's a cover to make sure that they're not going to get anywhere near them. We do have, however, unfortunately, that Hunter is racing, you know, behind the pack. I don't know why he's not at the first part, but he's, you know, at the back of the pack. And unfortunately, he gets hit by a barrage of bullets and rocket fire. And he gets knocked off of his bike. And the rest of the guys make it to the aircraft, and they all jump onto the aircraft. But unfortunately, you know, his communications are down. We don't know where Hunter is. And we do see that Hunter has gone up to the hatch of... Now, I don't know how you even... So this is another thing that I don't understand. When the whole thing started, Guerrera was sitting in a pod. He closed the hatch of the pod to make sure that he wasn't going to get killed by any of the barrage of rockets that are being fired by Megaforce. How did Hunter know what tank Guerrera was in? Now, Guerrera is his friend, supposedly. So how did he know that this was the tank that he had to go up to knock on the hatch?
You're asking me?
Kat doesn't know because she didn't see this part. But
yeah, I slept through most of it, to be honest with you.
But anyway, he goes up to a hatch. He knocks on the hatch with the butt of his gun. And, well, I have to play the sound grab because it is that awesome.
Hey! Hi, Duke. Oh, listen, I just wanted to say goodbye and remind you that the good guys always win, even in the 80s.
So I don't know about you, but the good guys always win, even in the 80s. That's awesome. That is such a great line. Now, before Megaforce took off onto their little journey, the guy who is in control of all the weaponry in Megaforce and coming up with gizmos, he said to Hunter, there is a situation on your motorcycle where if you are stuck, I don't know how you can figure this one out, this motorcycle can fly. Yes, it can. Now, it's got two airfoils at the back of the motorcycle and rocket powers for him to fly into the air, but the steering of a plane, I thought, had to have some sort of steering at the front and the back to make it fly.
It has to have, I think the wings need to be able to adjust to, you know.
Okay, well, this doesn't adjust. Once the airfoils are clipped out to make it look like you're a plane, that is it. It's got nothing. It's got no pitch, no roll, no nothing. So to steer, you've got Hunter holding onto the handlebars of the motorcycle, turning the handlebars left and right, but it's not going to influence where the hell you're going to go. So you're either going to have to lean left or right, but it's not going to give you an altitude. I mean, the rockets, when he presses, because he, as he's going along, he says he's got to press number one button, which is to drop the airfoils. Number two is to start the rockets to fly off. Now, all I can see is that the lift to make the bike go up is not possible. All it's going to do is, if you're going to put airfoils at the sides of your motorcycle and press the second button to actually get the rockets going, you're just going to rocket off on the ground level. You are not actually going to take off. But we have to dispel belief in this movie that this is out of the realms of possibility. He manages to bring his motorcycle up into the air, and then you see a really, really bad green screen, and he flies off into the distance. Now, Guerrera is watching this from the ground, and we are seeing that the guys are in the aircraft, and they've already taken off. And Dallas happens to see what's coming, and he says to the pilot, "Listen, it's the boss. It's Hunter. We've got to get it back on the ground." And he's like, and the pilot's like, "You know, I'm a pilot, not a magician." Just, and he's like, "Okay, well then, just hold it right there." Now, as he's flying, now when I saw this on VHF, I never saw this scene, but as he's flying towards the aircraft, Hunter does a full 360 spin.
Wasn't that in the promos?
It was in the promos. And this is where Dallas goes, "Well, you get sick if you keep doing that." And it's like, it's the biggest lot
don't
of hooey.
Don't try and do an American soldier.
I'm not going to try that. It is the biggest lot of hooey in the world. To the point where Hunter does land the bike onto the plane and jumps off and gives a heroic, "I hear, da-da, I've arrived." And now we do see, now we're actually back.
It's amazing that Barry Bostwick didn't castrate himself in this.
I don't know how he didn't do that. Now we're now back on the ground as we're getting towards the end of this podcast, and we're seeing that there is a press conference going on with Zara and Byrne White, and they're talking about the fact that there was some hostility in that part of the world, but we were not involved in it. We were not partaking in it. We do not agree with it, whatever. And we're seeing that there is a plane coming across the sky. And this is where Byrne White goes, "Oh," now Byrne White had a very, very beautiful red and white helicopter that he absolutely loves and adores. And as we're seeing the plane go past them, Hunter fires two rockets into the plane and explodes the helicopter. And this is when Hunter then presses the intercom to the pilots and says, "Okay, guys, let's get back to base. I have a date in London." And this is where you see that Zara gives him the thumb kiss in the air. And this is where Hunter gives her the thumb kiss from the air to the ground. The movie goes to black, and we see the entire movie again, all shot through the 3 minutes of credit scenes. And that is the end of Megaforce.
You were supposed to tell me when we got to the point when Guerrera was talking to General Byrne White.
Yes, we did. I did.
No.
Yeah,
I said I had trivia.
All right, give us the trivia.
All right. Well, no finish, and then I'll go through the rest of the trivia.
No, that's it. All I was going to say is between 0 to 5 movie reels, 0 being how do I get the last 99 minutes of my life back, to 5, it was a perfect movie, and I watched it all over again. I would ask you, but you slept through half of it, but what would you give this movie 0 to 5?
Let me ask you, what would you give this movie?
If you asked the 10-year-old Paul, I would give it 7 out of 5. It was that fucking awesome. If you were to ask the age that I am now, this is going to be really, really upsetting. For the action scenes alone, I'll give it a 3 out of 5.
It's really that high.
Yeah, it's for the action scenes. The dialogue is terrible. The acting is terrible. The story is terrible because it starts, finishes, and ends at 0. But I would give it a 3 just for the action sequences. That's all I would give it. What would you give it out of 5?
Minus 20.
No, you can't give it a minus 20. It's either a 0 or a 5. What would you give it?
0.
0. I know you'd give it a 0 because it's not your sort of movie, and it is not.
No, I do love that kind of movie, but this one was just done badly.
Yeah, it really was. It really shows you but the thing is what I can't understand is that Hal Needham did Cannonball Run.
I know.
He did Smokey and the Bandit.
But how did he do something this terrible?
Yeah, how could he screw up this badly?
After doing those.
I know. He had 2 great hits on his hands. Do a third one and screw it up this badly? So what was our fun facts from
Okay, so there's
Guerrera.
A few fun facts that apparently I fell asleep during the recording of this podcast and totally missed you talking about them.
Okay.
There was a video game based on the film released in 1982 on the Atari 2600. The 1982 commercial for the Atari 2600 Megaforce video game featured a young Australian named Bryan Cranston.
Oh, really?
Yep.
But that wasn't Bryan Cranston that was in Breaking Bad, was it? It was an American ad. Bryan Cranston is American.
I'm thinking of Brian Brown, aren't I?
Yeah, no, Brian Cranston is the one that did Breaking Bad.
Let me just double check that.
Yeah.
That was the guy in Breaking Bad. Yep.
Yeah, he's an American actor.
Yep. But he did the commercial for the Atari 2600 Megaforce game.
Which I will tell you, I did play that game, and it is terrible.
Just as bad as the movie?
Yeah, pretty much. It okay. really was.
So in the romantic silhouette scene, because I never heard you talk about the romance, the scene where they had sex.
They didn't have sex.
Yes, they did.
No, they didn't.
They just didn't show it.
They didn't. Well, they didn't have it.
They just didn't show it. That was one of the few bits I didn't sleep through. But anyway, in the romantic silhouette scene between Commander Hunter and Major Zara, Barry.
Hang on a minute. Sorry to interrupt. Their romantic silhouette scene. This was after they'd actually finished with her trying to get into Megaforce.
Yeah.
They were just talking backwards and forwards. It wasn't a
romantic scene. No, because the camera went zeroed as they started to get it on. The camera zeroes in on the candle flame and then transitions to the next day.
I literally have to watch this
and
one over again.
Back in the 80s, that's how they said, okay, they're now having sex. We're just not going to show it to you.
Okay, I have to watch this movie over again because I can't remember there's a candle scene. But go ahead.
Yes, there was. So okay. In the romantic silhouette scene between Commander Hunter and Major Zara, Barry Bostwick used his right hand to briefly cast a shadow which resembled his genitals in profile.
Okay, good.
That's about the intelligence level of this movie.
Oh, I like that one.
Asked at the time, he did claim it was accidental, but in a 2004 interview with Sight and Sound, the magazine of the British Film Institute, he actually admitted that it had been an intentional slight toward director Hal Needham, with whom he was involved in an unprofitable Ponzi scheme.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
See, I just don't remember that scene of them with a candle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really.
Yeah, it wasn't very memorable. So. Barry Bostwick, whom I adore. I've seen him in a ton of stuff, and I really like him.
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I didn't even realize that was him.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Damn it, Janet.
Yeah, no, the Brad Majors.
Yep. So anyway, Brad was...
Blah, 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 blah.
Barry was cast as the lead after the producer saw him in a Los Angeles stage production of The Pirates of Penzance. Albert Ruddy said he and the director had talked to another actor earlier in the development stage when the script was more serious. However, Ruddy decided, I didn't want to do another Dogs of War type of movie. I wanted this to be more camp, more of a spoof, but still believable. Once we'd seen Barry, we knew right away he was just right for the part. And I get that they wanted to make it more campy and spoofy, but they lost it on the still believable part.
Yeah, it is a very, very campy movie, Megaforce. It's not a movie. As I said, you know, it's 99 minutes of sitting there just tuning out. I mean, the character development is really nothing. I mean, even the character development between Zara and Hunter is really nothing, because it really shows you that he is still misogynistic enough to sit there and go, well, yep, I'm going to let you go through this entire test because you're not going anywhere anyway, but I'm just for my own amusement. So he doesn't really, he's not developed in any way, shape or form. Zara, you know, she starts off as the sort of like the very domineering, you know, how dare you have us meet in the middle of nowhere. And she becomes very authoritarian. Then he basically just belittles her down to nothing. And then when she does say, I'm a soldier, not a politician, I want to join you guys and I want to come and help you. And it's like, well, okay, let's see. And she does all this macho shit to get into Megaforce. And then it's like, oh, but you're a girl. You can't do
that.
Then
she turns into the girly girl.
And then she basically sits there and goes, oh, okay. Well, I'll get it on with you anyway.
Yeah, she kind of does a little bit of what Marion Ravenwood did in the original Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is she's a complete badass up until they're on the ship and... and she has sex with Indy, or sleeps next to him because he fell asleep. And the next day they're boarded by the Nazis and taken to open the Ark. And she is just like, don't even touch me. She can drink anybody under the table. You know, you don't mess with her.
Yeah.
Until she's got the feminine nightdress on. And then when the Nazis are taking her up on deck, it's like, ew, ew, ew. I just wanted to slap her.
And that's why Zara, you know, she starts off as a badass. And, you know, even to the point that she's a major and Burn White is a general. And she's saying to the general, you're not crossing the border. Get the hell away from me. Yeah. You're not coming to my side of the country.
Yeah.
You know, and he sits there and goes, oh, okay, I better not do that. So, you know, for some reason, they cast her as being a badass and then oh, my God, I might break my nails.
Yeah, I know. I
Is
hate
that
it.
serious?
And that is really common in 80s movies, and I really hated it. I hate it when they do that.
Look, and even Guerrera to some degree, you know, he's supposed to be the villain in the movie. He really is not that villainous. I mean, he's trying to offer a hand to Hunter and say, "Listen, I'll get you out of this situation. You can't cross the border, and when you go into the to this the dry lake bed, you're going to be picked up by your planes. Well, I'll give you safe passage if you just lay down your arms, and I'll guarantee you, area out of here." And he's like, "No, I'm fine. That's okay." But he's like, "Oh, okay, well, that's fine. I can." I mean, the thing is, what I find interesting is like Guerrera goes into the camp, and this is the thing I didn't touch on. He goes into the camp where Hunter's soldiers are, and he wants to talk to Hunter about this whole fact about you can't cross the border, and I'm waiting for you on the dry lake bed. Why is it that at that stage Hunter didn't say to his entire army, "Okay, kill him. What are you going to do? The other guys are miles away. By the time your tanks start rolling to find out what the hell is happened to Guerrera, you guys are gone. You guys are mercenaries. Even if you hunted throughout the world, you're mercenaries. You know where you're going to go. People are going to go up against you. You've got the best weapons in the world. So what's the why didn't Hunter just decide to just end him right then and there? It doesn't make any sense.
I
This
don't know.
movie doesn't make sense, unfortunately.
Nothing about this movie makes sense to me.
But I enjoyed it anyway. Do we have any more fun facts?
Yeah, I actually had two more that related to the first one that was we did 10 minutes ago.
Okay.
So when Guerrera says the gen, okay, because okay, going back to refresh your memory,
Yeah.
we were talking about how Barry Bostwick was found during a performance of Pirates of
Pirates of
Penzance.
Penzance, yeah.
Okay, so that's the key element here.
Okay.
When Guerrera says that General Burn White is the very model of a modern major general, it's a reference to Gilbert and Sullivan's composition, "I am the very model of a modern major general," from their comic opera Pirates of Penzance.
Oh, okay.
And following on that, before you can jump in with another 20-minute dialogue or monologue, Dallas tells General Burn White that some of the information Scuff has on him is "your daddy's rich and your mama's good looking." That line is taken from the George Gershwin and DuBose Hayward composition, "Summertime," from the opera Porgy and Bess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just thought that was kind of interesting.
That's interesting.
So, a soundtrack release was originally planned for 1982, but didn't happen actually until 2011.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah, so
Why is
almost
that?
30 years later.
Jesus. Okay.
According to an interview with composer Gerald Immel, published in the soundtrack CD booklet, he asked Carly Simon to write and perform lyrics to the love theme heard during the skydiving scene. Carly considered it, but ultimately declined, so the song remained an instrumental.
Actually, I like the instrumental bit of music on that
Yeah.
when they're doing the romantic skydiving scene.
Now, this last one is specifically for you, my love.
Okay.
No, you're gonna like this one.
I'm holding on for bated breath on this one. This is going to be good.
"Megaforce" by 707, the movie's title song, reached number 12 on Billboard's mainstream rock chart. According to 707, singer guitarist Kevin Russell, producer Keith Olsen brought in Journey's Jonathan Cain to play the keyboard intro, and Cain insisted on a cut of the publishing, which is the only reason why he's listed as a co-writer. Actual co-writer Todd Howarth later re-recorded the song as "Calling to You" with Ace Frehley's band Frehley's Comet, removing Kane's credit and adding Frehley.
Really?
You didn't know
Holy
that?
crap. I didn't know that Ace did that one.
They told you you'd like that
Holy
one.
crap on a cracker. Oh,
That's
that
why
is
I saved that one for
awesome.
last.
You see, this is why I like Megaforce. They actually had the lead guitarist of Kiss in there as well.
It
Thank
had
you.
nothing to do with Megaforce. It was like 15 years later.
Freaking awesome. What a great movie this was. I don't know why this didn't actually get any Academy Awards. This is the movie where all movies should actually look and see how good they really are. What a great movie.
Okay, can we put everybody out of their misery and end this one now?
Yes, we certainly can. Now, if you'd like to get in contact with us to say how awesome we are, or just please don't ever do Megaforce again, just email us at
Movie
homeclass movie
chat.
chat
No, hello at
at
homeclassmoviechat.com.
homeclassmoviechat.com. Yeah. So you
Okay,
can
let me
certainly.
say that again so we're not talking over each
Okay.
other. Our email is hello at homeclassmoviechat.com.
And there you can contact us directly. And you can also give us suggestions on movies that we could review for you guys. And listen, if you love this podcast, please give us a rate and review on either Apple Podcasts.
And please don't judge the whole podcast just on the fact that he made me do Megaforce.
I've been wanting to do Megaforce for ages, and she has been saying, I would do it, we'll do it, we'll do it, we'll do it. And we finally
saying, let's do it and get it the hell over with.
Yeah.
Have to hear about it again.
Okay. But I'm going to definitely have to rewatch this movie just to see this so-called sex scene, because I can't even remember that part of the movie.
It was that memorable.
Well, there we go. But yes, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5 simply because of the action. Kat's giving it a 0 because, well, she slept through 98% of it.
Because it was that interesting.
But next week, we promise we will actually have a better film.
We're actually going to do a movie that's up there on my list that I absolutely adore.
And funny enough, I actually had been saying I was not going to watch this movie, and I did.
And he's like,
really,
okay, I'll sleep through it with you. And he actually likes it almost as much as I do now.
Yeah, it is now one of my favorite movies.
You really
got
to learn to trust me on these things.
Yes, young Padawan, I will trust you.
Young Padawan, excuse me.
Yes. Well, obviously, this Jedi went very, very left of center with Megaforce. So, but I have the T-shirt, so she will live in history with Megaforce T-shirt. When I would wear
all right. Well, thanks for joining us this week, everybody. If you made it to the end, you're a better person than I am.
Yeah, congratulations on making it to the end of Megaforce. Well done.
So we'll see you next time. And bring your popcorn, your candy, and your soda, and we'll see you at the movies.
Bye, everyone.